The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive, and is it done? Watching the last semifinal? No, there's still time running, but I believe it's about done. As Argentina looks like they're going to come from behind, scoring two goals in the final 10 minutes after being down 1-0, and right now. are seconds away, if it hasn't stopped, from beating England 2-1 to advance to the finals of the World Cup for the championship of the World Cup on Sunday against Spain. So, that's it, it appears. So Argentina, folks that went over to Jordan-Hare Stadium, have gotten to see an Argentina team that will defend its World Cup title on Sunday as we welcome you in to the Thursday Drive. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing good. That was I was watching the start of that match, and then by the time I the
clock's still running, so
it's, okay, yeah. It's still going.
I looked up and it's at 101 and a half and still counting. I mean, the way the players were responding while we were looking, we didn't have any sound on. I thought it was done, so. It's not over. It ain't over till it's over.
It's over now.
As Messi is celebrating now. So, yes, it's a final, 2-1.
But, yeah, I left, and it was, I think, 1-0. And I told my girlfriend, I was like, just text me updates. And by the time I pulled in here, it was like they just tied it up.
And by the time I walked in. Yeah, I was going to say, you hadn't been in the door very long when they scored their second.
Yeah, no. I think it was Justin Ferguson tweeted that Argentina had Auburn Jesus on their side. That seems fitting for how narrow of a comeback that was.
Yeah, no kidding. Great one here today. I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it. I mean, just was keeping up with it. Was in the car a good bit. So that's the big news right now as Argentina has advanced. We've got quite a few things we can get to here today, but we'd love for you to, you can sort of direct us if you'd like, whatever you want to talk about. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. Another gorgeous day, a hot one here. It's the middle of July. That's the way it's going to be, and it's just going to get hotter. As a matter of fact, only in the 80s here the last couple of days and heading toward the weekend, and it's just going to get hotter as we head up toward the start of preseason football. Of course, next week, SEC Football Media Days down in Tampa, and we learned yesterday the participants for every team, and Auburn's three, not really a surprise. I think everybody had expected Byron Brown. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people thought, yes, Alex McPherson makes a lot of sense. And we talked about Champ Anthony last week, Adam. That's Auburn's third and the defensive participant.
Yeah, no, that was my first thought when I saw it was, hey, I think Bill and I were pretty right on the nose with that. And, I mean, the other thing, too, is you think about this is all, of course, media days, right, and storylines, and it's just – we know at least two of those storylines from years past very well with Alex and Champ, but you know, between the three of them, it's like there's a lot for those guys to talk about.
Oh, you're not kidding. You're not kidding.
Like just great stories all in all. And I think it was Ferg did this story this morning, but of Auburn's like media day representatives like heading into that year, I believe Champ Anthony has the fewest career snaps like dating back to 2000 or something like that for any Auburn media days rep.
Wow. I would have thought somebody maybe there may have been somebody who was just a second year player or something at times.
Keldrick was the closest because I think Champ Anthony had like 403 and I think Keldrick had 415 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty close, but that's I don't know. I feel like that is telling of Champ Anthony's story up to this point with
Auburn.
But
he has been around. And I mean, he's been through some tough times, and he's a guy. I mean, it's interesting. I would guess Alex was the guy that was the most highly touted coming out of high school, but kickers never get that much, you know, press, or they don't have as many stars or whatever coming out. But I mean, Alex was probably the most well known coming out of high school. Yeah. Byron Brown was a three-star. Champ, you know, had to start off and work his way up, and has you know, moved in. When Auburn signed Champ as a late transfer 3 years ago, I don't know how much was expected of him. It's just like, well, there's somebody. Auburn needed another defensive back, so they went out and got him, and he's come in and worked hard, been a leader, gone through some tough times injury wise, but has continued to battle back, and is just one of the leaders of this team.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot that, okay, we need to send three people who represent this program up to the podium, and it's like this guy who has had a couple of injury-plagued years, the fact that he's one of those three, I think that says a lot about Champ Anthony, mm-hmm. clearly, and clearly what, you know, the program and certainly the new administration, so to speak, presumably thinks of him, you know, because he was still, like, he was a team captain last year. I have to remind myself that. But, yeah, it was, you know, you wish he was healthier last year after the way things ended the year before in that Arkansas game.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, exactly where he fits in this year. You know, he's going to play. But, you know, will he be a nickel? Will he be, will he be a safety? I mean, where will he fit in? But regardless, you know, he'll be one of the leaders of this team. And a great guy, great story. I mean, all three of these players for Auburn, you know, as you said, there's plenty for the media to be asking and finding out about, because, I mean, they're really interesting stories, all three of them. And Alex, of course, has gone through mm-hmm. as trying a period as anybody that I can think of that is, you know, has gone through it and weren't sure if they were going to be able to make it back, and now is and feeling fine and hopefully back in the form that he had a couple of years ago, which as good a kicker as anybody in the country had.
Yeah, I still was just, even just looking at it on paper, you know, writing that yesterday, just super impressed with the fact that, I know he was in much better health last year, but the fact that it just seemed like he was right back to where he was before all of that. You know, I would not have expected the year that he had last year, just coming off all that stuff. You have what, one Mulligan game against Mizzou,
yeah.
and then you manage to wipe that, you know, the next week, no problem, against Arkansas. Like, he's you know, just quite the story. It's you're impressed by it, then you look at it a little more, and somehow you're even more impressed.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, so yeah, they will do a great job. There's no doubt in my mind about that. That's going to be three guys that will represent Auburn and Auburn football about as well as you could hope. So, interesting group throughout the conference. We'd said it last week, don't expect as many quarterbacks, nine quarterbacks this year out of the 16 teams. You know, we've seen it where, you know, there have been a dozen, and even out of when the conference had 14 teams, you know, 10 or 11 quarterbacks, just about everybody taking a quarterback. Not many surprises in that area, with one exception. I was more than a little surprised to see that LSU's not taking Sam Leavitt.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, Lane not taking, you know, a big-time transfer quarterback. I mean, maybe to sort of take a little of the pressure off of Sam. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because he is just... I imagine some of this stems from all the Sorsby stuff that went on this offseason, but...
Probably.
I kind of have to remind myself that Sam Leavitt's at LSU. I feel like I've had to do that a couple times this year, but even if it's, you know, that's probably just more coincidental than anything, but that feels rather fitting, you know. But granted, like, I look at two of those guys, and I know TJ Daugherty was an Ole Miss guy. I forget, was Tre'Dez Green an Ole Miss guy? Do we know? He's their other rep beyond Whit Weeks.
I didn't think so, but...
Yeah, I forget where he was last year, but I think Daugherty and Weeks make a lot of sense for them. I don't know enough off the top of my head.
Oh, absolutely. Weeks does. I mean,
but yeah, that is surprising to not see Sam Leavitt there. You figured that might have been probably one of the locks.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the sure things going in. But what's telling is the schools that the other schools that don't, because at a lot of those schools, you have an idea. You have a, you know, there's you know, feelings about the depth chart situation, but no guarantees. Mm-hmm. So that's going to make things really interesting, and I think makes it a little bit more difficult to just know what to expect from everybody, because, we know over the last few years right here that if you have struggles there at quarterback, it's going to be very difficult for your team to contend.
Not to mention, I mean, like, Auburn has sent two quarterbacks in the last couple of years to media days who, you know, I mean, obviously Jackson Arnold, like there was a change made,
right?
And then Peyton Thorne, even if it wasn't, you know, even if it flipped back, there was a change made with him at one point in his playing career. So it's looking through, I think, like Kentucky, Mississippi State, there's a couple schools in there where, you know, you're maybe a little more uncertain about the outlook this year. They're sending a quarterback, but you wonder, you know, is somebody going to have the Auburn experience in that way?
Oh, yeah,
this year?
Yeah. And then you see, I mean, you know, schools that have had prolific quarterbacks. I mean, we mentioned Sam Leavitt, Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, not sending a quarterback, and they've, you know, since Josh has been there at Tennessee, his quarterbacks have put up big numbers.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I feel like things at that position at Tennessee have felt a little chaotic ever since. I always butcher his last name, but Nico wound up transferring to LSU.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, like that position on the whole there to me has just, even with Aguilar last year, I know he had a solid year.
He did.
It's just felt like rocky. No pun intended. I genuinely did not mean to do that. But, you know, yeah, it's what? It's them, LSU. Florida's not sending a quarterback.
Right.
Missouri.
Well, Alabama.
Alabama, yeah. And it's funny, too, because it's like Missouri's not sending a quarterback, but they have named Austin Simmons their starting quarterback already this offseason. You know, I don't know why you wouldn't send him. But, that's an interesting makeup, just kind of looking at all that. I've never really...
Well, I mean, some schools would rather not, especially if they have somebody that's been in the program for a few years and the coach has been there for a few years, then you want to reward somebody who, you know, who can go in and talk about everything they've gone through and what the program's gone through, and they have a better idea of relating, you know, to the past few years and what to expect this year. And Auburn's got two of those guys, obviously.
Yeah.
And then Byram is a guy that can relate to what to expect from Alex Golish's offense.
Yeah. No, that's honestly like that's I don't know. That is a good reminder because, you know, Austin Simmons, for example, like does not fit that mold for Missouri. But no, I've never gone through and looked at the quarterbacks and like thought through it like in this way. It's, I don't know. This is an interesting exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's I think Auburn will be all in all like just very well accounted for, you know, next week in Tampa. And, you know, I'm curious like what storylines come out of this, too. You know, I think about like, This is maybe a lousy example, but last year it was we talked a lot about these personality tests that,
right,
I think just kind of wound up being a moot point at the end of it all.
Yeah, you're right.
But
yeah, whatever happened there. So
there's always one or two of those things. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah,
what we
learn.
Yeah, I
mean, yeah. Well, you know, a couple of the subjects that are going to be. It's going to be interesting to me to see, you know, the Tampa press that shows up that, you know, knows Alex Golish and Byram Brown.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
and what they asked them.
Yeah, that's a really good point because that has just been, I feel like it hasn't necessarily been written about, but yeah, like you've got, it was in my head, okay, Alex Golish is going back to his old stomping ground, but didn't even think about it till yesterday. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. like Byram Brown's probably doing the same. So I wonder if there will be any sort of scrutiny, you know. I know there was a lot in Twitter replies when he got hired, but I do wonder about that part of it for sure.
I can't imagine that there won't be, you know, some. There's got to be, you know, one or two folks that are going to see what kind of response they can get. So, yeah, that'll make it interesting. And that, of course, is next Tuesday morning. Auburn and Georgia going next Tuesday morning on day two of Media Days. And then how long are you sticking around?
I am flying in on the 20th. I've got a dear friend who him and his fiance moved to Tampa about a year ago.
Oh, cool.
So I'm staying with him. We'll be around on the 21st, and then we're just going to fart around in Tampa on the 22nd and fly back on the 23rd. So I'll be there for all of Auburn, and we'll have, you know, a bunch of stuff going on at the Montgomery Advertiser for that, you know, written word, video, the whole nine yards. But yeah, hoping to get a little siesta day on the end of it. And
oh yeah, why
Tampa.
Not? I mean, if you're going to go to Tampa, you might as well enjoy a little bit other than just hanging out, listening to coaches and players.
My thoughts exactly.
Oh yeah. All right, we're just getting underway here on the Wednesday Drive. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports wise, we'll talk a little more about Auburn baseball. Want to get Adam's thoughts on that as we're going to get a chance to meet Coach Ammo tomorrow. The latest addition to Auburn staff, get Adam's thoughts on the fallout after the Major League Draft. We'll talk All-Star Game, not the most thrilling nail-biting game. That game felt like it was over in about the third or fourth inning last night. I mean, I just felt like National League's not they're not going to get anything going against the American League, and that was the case. I mean, they only had one hit going to the eighth inning.
I didn't realize it was that lopsided. I just kind of had it on the TV and wasn't.
Well, it felt like most innings were just pretty routine, you know. And the American League used 11 pitchers. I don't know how many times I didn't see this, didn't really look for it, but in a 9-inning game, I don't know how many 9-inning shutouts you're ever going to find, even in an All-Star game where you use 11 pitchers.
Yeah, that's got to be a scoreigami or some equivalent of that.
No kidding.
Certainly not at the All-Star game stage. You know, you don't see that much at all, but you'd never expect it to that
way. They didn't really tax any of the pitchers there on the American League. All right, we'll get to our first break here of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join us. Come on in.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We were talking a little baseball about the MLB All-Star Game, which the American League wins 4-0 last night. I think that's 11 out of 13 for the American League. The National League had a long, long run of dominance up until around 2000. Since then, it's been almost all American League. It's crazy how, I mean, and I think the last night was the 96th. I think it's like 49, 45, and 2.
Okay.
Two ties. So, I mean, it's that close, but it has been really crazy periods of just a decade or so of just dominance by one league, and then the other league, you know, has been able to make a run.
I was kind of realizing last night as I had that game on and was only paying so much attention to it.
Yeah, me too.
Like, when was the last time there was a super competitive like MLB All-Star game? I can't, you know, and I think that's more on me than anything. Like I can't remember the last time I tuned in and was like, this is.
Well, I tell you, we were talking about it a little yesterday with Jason. I mean, it used to be to me that there was no comparison. It was the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. It was one. It meant more. But I mean, now you see all these, you see all the teams whenever you want. You can watch any team except the Braves. You can watch any team anytime you want if you subscribe to, you know, MLB.com or .tv, and it's easy to keep up with every team much more than you used to. And you've got interleague, and you have so much interleague now that I think it's taken away from the feel that there used to be. I mean, you'd have hardcore American League fans and National League fans, and they were really proud of, they wanted their league to be, you know, the dominant league. They wanted to win. I think that's changed now, and I think it's just hard to expect anybody's going to be as excited. It's fun to watch, but it's not. There's not that intensity that it just felt like there used to be in the All-Star game. It's become like other All-Star games now.
But like, even for what it is worth, it feels a lot better than, you know, I don't even know that I have to acknowledge whatever the Pro Bowl's become in the NFL now.
It's
tough. Yeah. You know,
that's just I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to call it.
And I can totally understand it for the sake of the players. You know,
sure.
Playing another game.
Sure.
That's quite a toll. But you know that. I feel like the NBA All-Star game isn't always that competitive.
No, the NBA All-Star game is an offensive showcase.
Right.
What it is. I mean, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, but you just don't see, you don't see players that appear to be as you know, intense and putting everything out there, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, no, you're not seeing Pete Rose, you know, ending Ray Fosse's career.
Yeah.
Things like that. I mean, that's the way All-Star games used to be. They were really, really intense, but things have changed. But I still enjoy it more than I do the other All-Star games.
What I usually find is that I will get my attention is gotten by the Home Run Derby.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just am like, okay, I got to watch the All-Star game. Have you been to an All-Star game?
I
have been.
Okay, it, cool. I have not.
It was... Was it in Kansas City in 2012? Is that when it was, or was that 2010?
It's been a while.
We went, and it was funny enough. My mom was working for a company back home at the time that had recently been purchased by, I think it was a company called Guggenheim. And if that rings any bells, they very shortly after that put in a bid to co-own a Major League Baseball team with Magic Johnson. So they were co-owners of the Dodgers.
Wow.
And I just remember, you know, I mean, like, I'm maybe late elementary school, early middle school, mm-hmm. and, you know, baseball.
Oh, that's a great time
right.
to go.
And I was just like, you know, I'm not going to ask my parents for that. Like, that's a little ridiculous. And then one day my mom called my brother and I into the family room and was just like, I guess the company had some tickets wow. to the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Game, and the Fan Fest. And my mom told me, I remember this at the time, she was literally like, it felt wrong to just snatch them up. And she was like, I waited. And I think she waited like a week, and nobody took them.
Wow.
And so she was just like, well, you know, at that rate. And then, yeah, we got to go see an All-Star Game, a Home Run Derby.
Oh,
and
man.
It was one of one. I think my favorite memory was not like the highlight to me. Robinson Cano was one of the Home Run Derby mm-hmm. captains, I guess, for the AL team. Billy Butler was an All-Star that year. Did not pick Billy Butler. The fans booed Robinson Cano like they did. They booed Wilson Contreras and Jordan Walker the other night. And I think he only left the yard once. He just flopped. It was an incredible thing to watch. And I think Prince Fielder won that one, which was cool. But no, yeah, it's stuff I will never forget like that weekend. It is one of one to be able to experience firsthand.
I mean, I've said if out of the All-Star weekend, I'd love to be at Home Run Derby. Love to go to a Home Run Derby. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's so fun. And I like the way they did it this year. It's so much better, mm-hmm. I think, than having the timed. You know, this way you don't have to worry about hurry up, you know, go ahead and throw that next pitch, or you're taking too long, that type thing. It's up to the batters to decide, you know, when they're swinging.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I felt like through the first round or two this year, I just wasn't sure how I felt. And then, like, as it just kept going, I was like, yeah, this is really good. I was like, this is a ton of fun. And to watch Jordan Walker do what he did,
yeah.
It was literally just like, this guy looks so calm right now. And afterwards, I mean, that's what he said. He was like, I was just trying not to think about like the significance of this moment, you know, to be able to do that. And nobody was able to, you know, like hit the magenta ball at the end. Everybody was having problems with that. So for him to rattle off three straight, it was just, that was really cool. That was really, really cool to watch.
Yeah. What a year he's had. I mean, he's a guy that you know, 3 years ago, everybody said, here he is. This is the next Dave Parker, you know, that's he's a big, ridiculously physical athlete. And, you know, a lot of Cardinals fans were wondering, was it ever going to show? And I mean, he's had an All-Star year and capped it with that Home Run Derby win.
Yeah, no, it was super cool. And then like his family was just so sweet. That was, I don't know, it was tender, you know. That was a cool element to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's stick with baseball a little bit, because big news coming out of Auburn. First let's get to the draft. Mm-hmm. I mean, Auburn was, you know, hoping to, you know, to not lose everybody. They didn't lose everybody, but they did lose three signees and saw seven members of this past year's team get drafted. All 10 of those guys expected to be signing contracts if they haven't already.
Yeah, no, I think the maybe unfortunate thing, depending on what your perspective was, going into this draft, you only spent so much in the portal that you felt like whether it was a signee, whether it was a big piece of last year, you might be able to hang on to a guy or two. And to come out of that and feel like, yeah, probably not going to hang on to any of them is.
Yeah, your top four guys, the four everybody, you know, mm-hmm. was talking about, all go in the first seven rounds. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's very difficult. You know, after Chris Remmert goes in the second, then you lose Eric Guevara and
Alex Petrovic.
Yeah, Alex and Ryan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Drew Whalen, too.
Right.
That was another one that was like, that was one of those where it was just like, dang. Because that to me was sort of a, I don't want to say hidden gem, but I feel like you think about that team next year.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody really talked about him. And it's like, well, if that guy's full health next year, he could be huge. And then it's like, okay, he was gone, I think, in round seven.
He went nine.
But still, it's like top half. Right. It's like, he's, you know, you're not spending.
Anybody in the top 10 rounds, we talked about it yesterday with Jason. I mean, MLB teams aren't going to draft somebody in the first 10 rounds if they don't think they're going to sign him.
Yeah. And I mean,
they don't know they're going to sign him pretty much.
Yeah. The most interesting part of that weekend was the Coleman Borthwick situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was, I think, the day before Kylie McDaniel at ESPN had reported that, like, Coleman Borthwick was among many that was a real risk to not sign and go to college. And just kind of like, I mean, my impression of it after, I made a few calls after that to be like, hey, like, what is this, you know, is there credence to this? And the vibe I got was that, like, his camp was expecting that he was going to make it to campus. You know, like they.
Well, I mean, I saw a projection of him going like in the, you know, mid 30s or something, you know,
right.
which would have been, you know, late first or, you know, end of the early second.
And
if that had been the case, maybe.
Maybe, but even then, I think it was more of a. I think the outlook was he had set his number, knew what he wanted it to be. And my thought was, as long as he doesn't go in really the first two rounds, just based on that number and it being so high, like, you've got a pretty healthy shot, you know? Like,
what LSU thought.
Right.
You saw what happened.
I don't know if I did.
Oh, with the Braves?
Okay.
You know, the Braves' number one draft pick, they signed him for nearly $3 million under what the number was. I mean, he was that happy to be with the Braves that they saved nearly $3 million, and they go tab an LSU signee in the third round and paid him $3 million over.
Oh, my word.
To get him is the most it's ever been paid over slot.
Well,
for a player after the second round.
I don't think that's what Auburn had happen here.
No, it's not. No,
so you got to.
Coleman's going to get his $4 million for being the 21st pick.
Exactly. You know, but no, it was really just there was maybe like a 12 to 18 hour window there where you're thinking, okay, is Auburn going to have a freshman Otani next year? And then it's like, you know, the Padres pick, and you're like, well, that was a nice dream.
Oh, yeah.
But no, interesting weekend. Probably, I guess, on paper didn't work out how you would have hoped, but I don't think it's, you know, you're not panicking.
They still have such a core returning, and they'd already added five pitchers through the portal, which was, you know, where the biggest losses appear to be. And then I guess it was overnight, you know, in the last 24 hours, they add another Renfield, shortstop, third baseman from UNLV.
I think it was Cooper Sheff was his name. I need to look into him a little more and read up on him. I have not.
His dad played pro ball for quite a while. He's a big kid.
Yeah.
Played left side of the infield. And yesterday, Jason was saying he thought Auburn might go for one batter and one pitcher. And, I mean, here's a guy that's got nearly a .290 career batting average in 2 years at UNLV, hit nine homers this past year, a 6'4 right-handed hitter. So, I mean, it sounds like just what Auburn, you know, was looking for.
Right. And I think that's the sort of pickup that they needed. And then, I mean, obviously the other piece of news we're going to talk about.
Like, oh, absolutely.
That to me just, like, it even changes my outlook to an extent on the transfer class of any feel of, man, maybe you needed to go get a real proven right-handed bat to put in this lineup. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have benefited you, but considering the hire that you made as far as who you're going to have as your hitting coordinator next year, I mean, the way I've put it cut and dried with this hire is you just went and took the hitting and transfer portal guy from the hitting and transfer portal school.
Right.
You know, and I'm very interested to see how these bats kind of evolve and grow in this next chapter and in this off season, because that's an exciting notion of what you could have on your hands if it clicks the way a lot of people think it might.
Oh yeah, I know we've got to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk more about the addition of Nick Amorati and Gabe. You know, moving into the admin phase in Auburn Athletics. But we'll get to our bottom of the hour break first. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Adam Cole here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Let's see, in case you're just tuning in and hadn't seen what happened today in the World Cup. Argentina with a couple of late goals, knocking out England 2-1. So they will face Spain on Sunday for the championship there in the World Cup. We're talking some baseball and really just sort of touched on the coaching changes that Auburn has made there in baseball. Gabe Gross, who's been Auburn's hitting coach for the last 9 years, is moving more into admin, going to be involved with engagement, and going to be able to spend more time with his teenage son and daughter. And so, Gabe, just one of the great guys. I mean, period. Just he's a great Auburn man. He's just a great man. Though. I mean, Gabe's one of the best folks you'll ever meet.
He has always been just like incredibly kind to me. And I think it was maybe two seasons ago, we got to know each other like a little better. And it was one of those things where, you know, we'd walk by each other at practice or in availability. There may be a head nod or hey, or what's up or whatever. But after that, it was just like every single time I saw that man, there was a handshake and or a fist bump. And there was always a conversation about what was going on in my life and how I was doing.
He is real. I mean, there's no question. Yes. And I'll tell you what, he's also a really good driver. I'll tell you this. Years ago, when I was doing, when I came back, I did Auburn High football for a couple of years. Gabe was my color guy. And he was just getting into broadcasting before he went to ESPN and the SEC Network and did a great job. But we were in Montgomery. And had finished a game. I don't even remember who we had played there at Crampton Bowl. And it was Gabe and me. Gabe was driving his truck. Let's see. Well, no, we were driving the station. We're with a Brentwood station vehicle. All right. Gabe and me, Scott Bagwell, who was the sideline, and Chuck Furlow, we're all in the truck. And as we got to the intersection there of, oh goodness, what is it? Where it goes north up to, oh golly, I can't think of the road. Right down from Lee High School as you're coming down to Montgomery Highway, coming sort of the back way, to get to the interstate. As we got there, as we're going through the intersection, a car comes just flying through the red light. And, I mean, hit us, and we, like, hit it, and it went flying up, and there was a house.
Oh, my word.
Right across the street, across the intersection, that it was about to plow into, but it hit a tree instead got to the house. But we spun around. I mean, Gabe did an amazing job of keeping us, like, from just completely getting out of control and flipping over and everything. I mean, the vehicle was absolutely undrivable. Ours was. Fortunately, the guy driving was like ejected from the car, but was okay.
Okay.
But I mean, it was like a crazy scene. But I mean, Gabe did a great job of somehow, you know, keeping his calm while we were like spinning around. Dodging other vehicles and trying to land in one piece.
So. That couldn't be me. I would do the thing where I think I'm turning the car in a way where it's safe.
Flip it and roll.
It's
there
exactly,
we go.
Exactly. I'd be like, oh, well, it needs to go this way. And then it's just like, oh, no, so that's pretty, that's a lot. That's intense.
Yeah.
Man.
But I mean, no, we had some great trips. I mean, it was great. Because, you know, he had so many experiences. We could talk about, you know, MLB and it was great. So yeah, great for Gabe that he's getting that opportunity. And then almost immediately, within 24 hours, I guess, the announcement that Nick Amorati, who, as you said, has been the hitting and portal guy there at the hitting and portal school, the University of Georgia, the last couple of years, and then at Kentucky, very successful at Kentucky before that. But his relationship with Butch goes way back to his playing days at Mississippi State when John Cohen was the head coach and Butch was the pitching coach and he was the catcher.
The vibe I got when I learned on what day would that have been? That would have been 2 days ago, Monday?
Yeah.
You know, I just – gotten a mention from somebody like, hey, you know, this there might be a change. You know, Gabe might be on the way out. But the vibe that I got was that it wasn't a move that was going to be made if, like, there wasn't, you know, there's probably a guy our understanding, and, like, it's, we wouldn't, this move would not be happening if there was not a guy. And it was just like, okay, well, who could that be? And, like, I just.
If you didn't know that relationship, if you didn't know that, you wouldn't have just said, well, we'll take the guy from the team that just set every offensive record.
Right. You know, but it's seriously just, it checks so many boxes of, you feel like you're bringing in a guy who you're hoping can tap even further into the power potential of this team. And, you know, I go back to, I think we talked about it, but the ambush event at the start of this month, you know, Butch was there and he just made a passing reference to the fact that, like, yeah, we've been pretty slow in the portal this offseason, and I know that might even be driving some people nuts, but, like, if they want me to be portal king, like, just wait until next offseason. And now you've
you'll have to be,
but you've now hired the guy who was tabbed as the director of transfer portal recruiting for Georgia, which has been, that's been their MO since Wes Johnson got there. You just, they somehow managed to reload every year and be just as good. So it's, I don't know, it's just a home run hire, you know, and I wish I had the better words to, you know, sum that up, because it just, I've always been impressed with the fact, since, like, being around this program, I feel like it has a tendency in all the right ways to think in terms of, you know, years down the line. You know, you make a move right now that, yeah, sure, impacts you in the short term, but it's probably going to impact you even that much more in the long term. And this just, again, it's another one of those. You know, I felt that way when they hired Everett Tiefert as pitching coach. It's like, okay, get some new school stuff in here, you'll see if it works, and then 3 years later, you've got one of the best pitching staffs in the country. So who knows what's in store for this one.
Yeah, can't be anything but excited if you're an Auburn fan about the future of Auburn baseball now. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I agree with you. I think there is much more potential there power-wise up and down this lineup. I mean, guys that had 10, I think, have the potential to hit 20 or more.
So where would that put Chase Frelick? Where did he finish the year in home run total? I know he just got nuclear.
It was 2021 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just, because that's the thing, is it's like, you know, this UNLV transfer, right?
Right.
I think initially when I see a guy going from, you know, I mean, even to a point non-SEC to SEC level, maybe ACC would be the exception, but I'm kind of, I'm prone to, like, wanting to poke holes in it.
Yeah. It's like, let's see how you do week in and week out against the level of competition you're going to face here.
Right, because that I feel like has had a high level of variance in recent years for Auburn. Is, you know, they've brought in some mid major hitters. Some have really clicked, you know, and others it just hasn't worked out as you've hoped. But, you know, to get a guy who's that big, who has that much potential,
and his dad has the bloodlines. I mean, you know, dad played pro ball,
and I think dad played at Pepperdine when they
I think they won it all.
Yes. But you have all that, you have all the potential, and you've made a hire now to me where you've seen it certainly at Georgia, and then I think it's the last 3 years, including his last year at Kentucky, he's been a part of 3 SEC championships and 2 trips to Omaha. You know, like, that's pretty dang good, and it's easier to be that much more excited about a guy and their potential, I feel like, with that hire.
And at Kentucky, it wasn't all bombs. I mean, it wasn't like they just went out and hit 150 homers.
Right. They've done it different ways, because, I mean, that is like, I would say that is the small ball team, like, of the SEC, especially since Nick Mangione's gotten there. And so to see that, too, I mean, like, that just adds another wrinkle to it, right?
Oh, so, yeah.
No, very exciting stuff.
Oh, no doubt about it. So we'll see if Auburn adds anybody else through the portal. I still wouldn't be surprised. Yes, we were saying, you know, maybe another pitcher. We'll see. But I mean, it's not as though the cupboard's bare for Auburn. I mean, my goodness, as Coach Ammo said in the release, and I'm sure we'll hear tomorrow. I mean, the opportunity to come into a program that has as much talent returning as Auburn, I don't think there's any team in the country that was going to have as much proven talent returning. Maybe, you know, maybe teams could feel like they could bring in some guys to the portal. But my goodness, if you'd gone out and had to sign Chase Frelick and Ethan Bingham and Bub Terrell and, you know, on and on, guys that are already here in the portal, I don't think you'd have had anything left.
Yeah, I feel like what I would say the only other team I can think of in that mold is maybe like Texas, mm-hmm. you know? And it's we said it all through the year. It's like, okay, this is a top 10, top 5 team right now, but with what they should be able to return next year, preseason top 3, like, you know?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not.
Exactly. But no, and it just keep thinking about that power potential, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's could be a big year.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Again, love to hear from you. Thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one here on the Wednesday Drive.
On Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Adam, while we got a minute before we jump into something else, let everybody know what you've got up and if you can, what you're working on. I know you're getting ready for Media Days next mm-hmm. week, though, but things that folks will find when they look for you there at the Advertiser.
Yeah, there has been a lot of baseball in the last few days, mm-hmm. and surely there will be a little more tomorrow with us getting to talk to Coach Ammo. You know, and we'll really start kind of having it roll out late this week and very early next week of the, you know, the Media Day stuff. And then we'll even have a little bit of basketball,
yeah.
too.
I want to get into that.
There was a, you know, we got to talk to Kevin Overton and Thomas Dowd this morning. So should have a little something in the morning on at least one of those guys. And down the line, you know, something on the other. But, yeah, a little bit of the big three coming up throughout these couple weeks here. So that's kind of what I've got in my world right now, work-wise.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, yeah, basketball, I mean, I know everybody that I've talked to is really excited. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to see these guys. And Auburn announcing that they're playing Florida State in the Ballin' at Boutwell October 14th, I believe. It's a doubleheader. With the women playing UCF at noon and then Auburn, Florida State mm-hmm. at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so that should be. Did you go to that last year?
Did not. Didn't get a chance to. It was during the week and I had some reason I couldn't make it.
It was really interesting.
Maybe Dan was somewhere and I had to be here. So
I think my only gripe, which is, you know, never going to be resolved, was there's, you know, it's a very old auditorium.
Oh, it is.
Of course,
it is.
There wasn't.
I've been in there, but yeah, it's been a while.
They had us in like a corner, you know, of the court, mm-hmm. and it wasn't even that we were in the corner. It was that the horn for the buzzer
was
right behind my ear. But it was a cool environment. The game got – that was a really interesting thing, was it almost felt like a foreshadow of it. It was like, okay, I don't know if Auburn really has what they need to do this. And then they just kind of clicked it on right at the end and, of course, took it to overtime. And mm-hmm. that was – I felt like kind of emblematic of that team last year, where
yeah.
it was like they just could look kind of funky and out there sometimes. But, like
– Well, when they clicked, yeah.
When they clicked, but they even just –
But
I felt
my goodness,
like they,
the three-point defense was a problem right there, and that turned out to be something that was
right. You know,
there all year.
You saw a lot of everything that, uh-huh. that you were going to come to see, but it was cool. So I'm excited for them to go back, and especially, I mean, with this team is just they're going to be this team's going to be fascinating to watch.
First impressions, just seeing the guys.
I will be honest, I think maybe my stock was ambivalent on Thomas Dowd, you know, like, and not mm-hmm. that, you know, there's obviously been a lot of talk about him and seems like an interesting type of player, but just today, you know, a lot of the talk was just about all of the stuff that he doesn't do or all the stuff he does that isn't, you know, just scoring and putting the ball mm-hmm. in the hoop. And I will admit, I know I told you, you know, between spots here, got told there was practice starting about 7 and that they do interviews today at 9. And I was like, I'll see if I can get up for a practice at 7. But by the time I got there, it was much closer to 9. And they had actually done a scrimmage.
Scrimmage, right.
So I did admittedly miss the scrimmage. Not proud of that one. But a lot of what got talked about was all of the stuff that Dowd did to win that game, the offensive rebounds, the hustle plays, the scrapping. And, like, I really think Auburn's just got kind of that, you know, that blue-collar vibe of basketball player
in him. Yeah, you need at least one, but you need some guys like that on your team, guys that do more than just what you see in the box score.
And so, you know, that's, I think, an exciting development. The funny thing to hear from him was talking about, he's like, usually I'm like one of the tallest guys on the team. And now
he's nowhere near.
He's like, now I got to play with 2 7-footers. And he's like, I'm kind of trying to figure some of that out. But the other interesting thing, too, was just some of the talk about Narcisse and Buke Aboye. And the fact that obviously you have multiple 7-footers, but the thing, I don't know that I've taken much time to really process it. These are two very, very different players. You know, you're talking about a guy who has overseas just built the foundation of his game on, I am 7 foot, I am going to block your shot, yeah. I am going to get rebounds left and right. And Buke Aboye is a guy who, you know, grew into that body and I think is still growing into it. So I just, this team, you can already kind of see the wrinkles and the interesting pieces of it coming out.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see them as well. So, all right, we're halfway done here on the Wednesday drive. Again, we've touched on quite a few things. We'll expand on some of them, get into others as well. And we'd love for you to join us. Anything you want to talk about in hour number two, which is coming up here on the Wednesday drive.
Of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Another nice-looking, hot July afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. Hope your AC's working well, because if not, who was it? Was it Dan? I was talking with Dan the other day, and he came home. He came back in from Montgomery, and he said it was 84 in his apartment. I went, well, that's warm, but just be glad it's not 90.
Yeah.
But I mean, no, when it's not working, that's just miserable. And talked to a younger son and daughter-in-law and our two grandkids who are in London. That there's, it's still warm there, and yeah, they don't have any AC, but they say at least their windows open and they can get a decent breeze and can get to sleep around 10 o'clock when the sun finally goes down.
Okay. Well, that's, at least there's some relief at some point.
Yeah. It is tough, though, man. If you're having trouble, this is not when you want to have it. Even though right now it's not as hot as it's going to be.
Yeah, but it has hit that point where, like, I might.
Oh, it doesn't really cool off. It's not cool in the middle of the night.
I go run out to my car to get something, and it takes 2 minutes, and I come back in, and it's like if I catch myself at the right angle in the mirror, it's like, okay, why are my pits drenched right now?
Yeah, like it's like I'm not glistening. I am pouring. It's like,
yeah,
I go out, and it doesn't feel bad for a minute. Today, it didn't feel too bad. And I'm out doing a little something. Hadn't even gone out in the yard. I was just doing a couple things in the garage. And it's like, I thought, hey, it's not too bad. Then a couple minutes later, I realized, man, I'm soaked.
Yeah.
This is, that's the way it is here in Alabama here in July. So yeah, be careful, folks. Keep those liquids.
Yes.
In you.
If you are not from here and you are freshly in town and around, I will tell you, like the first 3 summers I lived here, thought I came down with a summer cold for a week, and then I'd get to the end of it and I'd just be like, wait a minute, I have not been drinking water. And it's like this time of year, so like, drink water.
It'll hit you.
It'll hit you if you don't. Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks to the folks that have responded from. Every time we go to a show, I'll post a little something. Had to wait a day or so this time because my phone wouldn't zoom in quite as much as I wanted to when we were at the Paul Simon show on Monday night. So I got my wife to send me one of her little videos of I think it was 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover that I posted a little of Paul Simon on Monday night. But yeah, appreciate the folks that have responded to that. We do enjoy getting out and getting to some shows because some of these folks don't know how much longer you're going to see them. I've already, while we were there, I saw an ad for a show that's coming to Chastain next month. So we went ahead and I went ahead and got tickets to see the Isley Brothers and the OJs.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Blast from the past, but I mean that's a couple of acts that have been around for a long time and still have a few of the originals. The original lead singer of the Isleys, and the OJs are both still around.
I feel like go to a lot of concerts as well. And so like when you talk to me about concerts, I tend to like, I don't know. I wind up thinking about my parents. Sometimes I check in on them. But one of the things is like,
well, that's good for you to do, Adam.
I tend to, you know, my mom and I, we probably talk on average like once a day kind of
oh,
thing.
Wow,
you know?
That's great.
We're very close. But it's just funny because sometimes it's a reminder when they talk to me about concerts. It's a little different now. But when I was younger and obviously living in their home, like, if I really sat down and went through it, I could make a list of just like all-star list of concerts that I have like missed out on. You know, like I remember there was one time that I think it was Chicago came to Topeka mm-hmm. when I was in high school, and it was just like, I think a friend was doing something that night at their house and I went to do that. But it's one of those things where now I'm like, I could have seen Chicago. I don't know if I'm going to be able to see Chicago in my life, and I wish I would have like done that.
They're still touring with Earth, Wind, and Fire, I think, right
okay.
now. We saw them last summer in Atlanta.
That was one concert my folks and my brother went to.
I've seen Chicago a couple of times, but it was cool to see.
They went to see, I think, Earth, Wind, and Fire in Kansas City a year or two ago, and that's another one where it's just like, obviously a little different. That'd be a lot for me to get there, but it's just like,
oh, yeah.
I'd love to. I wish I took more time to go to concerts because that's just one of those things where maybe who knows later in life, you know.
Yeah, well, I see that that's being semi-retired, mm-hmm. you know. We've got a lot more time mm-hmm. now to be able to do that, but yeah, it's a blast. So got two more. I think we have two more this summer, and then don't know what we've got mm-hmm. after that. We'll just see. So,
do you have like I know like my folks will go see like they'll see Melissa Etheridge regularly. Mm-hmm. Like they'll see her. I mean, they've seen her more than once. I think it's Tedeschi Truck Drivers too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but like I mean, are those like do you have regulars like in your rotation who you go see with frequency? Or?
There haven't been as many. I mean. It's funny. I mean, my wife doesn't. I mean, there's some bands obviously that she likes better than others. Mm-hmm. But I mean, some if we've seen one a couple of times, she's going, "Well, is there somebody else we haven't seen mm-hmm. that maybe we can see?" You know. So mm-hmm. we're trying to hit as many as we can.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, the bands that we've probably seen more. I don't know that we're gonna make it out. I see they've got a few more dates at the Sphere in Vegas in December. I mean, we've seen the Eagles like three
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're a little pricey.
Yeah.
To see multiple times.
Yeah. No, that one. I think they toured with Donald Fagen a few years ago, right? From Steel, because mm-hmm. my folks went up to Omaha, I think, to see that concert, and that's one where I'm just like, I mean. For people who don't know, I am a major, just like huge. I'm wearing a Steely Dan T-shirt right now. I'm a big Steely Dan fan, but no, it's funny because they're both full on retired, and they just you know, I mean, they'll go to Red Rocks, they'll travel to uh-huh. do it, and like they've just reached the point now where it's like they have some semi regulars. They went to see a couple weeks ago Lyle Lovett at this, I guess,
oh yeah,
really really intimate venue in St. Louis that. He is technically one of the coolest concerts I've ever been to.
Oh, Lala is cool. He was mm-hmm. he was on the cruise that we went on
okay.
this past January. So you had him sort of captive, and that's one of the really cool things about music cruises mm-hmm. is they're there on the ship with you.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're regular folks. They go eat mm-hmm. in the cafeteria and go listen to what's cool about these is when there's multiple acts, mm-hmm. they're going to show up and listen to some of the other acts, sometimes sit in with them. And it's really cool when you can just sort of be kicking back, enjoying somebody. And, oh, there's Lyle mm-hmm. Lovett right yeah. there, you know, beside you. And you don't want to impose or anything, but generally you can, in between songs, get a little conversation going and something like that with some of those folks, which is really, really cool.
That's super cool. It's like the older I get, I like live music in the more intimate venues. But the one time I've ever seen Lyle Lovett in my life, I was 13. Like I had not heard a Lyle Lovett song.
Lyle and his large band.
It was not Lyle.
Because we've seen him. Yeah, we've mm-hmm. seen him with his large band, and then just when it's Lyle and like four or five other folks.
So he had a large band with him, but it was I don't know if they still do it, but like. You know, the picture most people have in their head of Kansas is pretty much everything west of, I would say, like Salina. And then there's eastern Kansas, and especially northeast Kansas is just like rolling hills. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love where I'm from, but it's the Flint Hills. They used to do a symphony every summer in the Flint Hills, this huge tent. They'd find this, you know, valley, and, you know, they'd pick a different spot every year, and, you know, you'd have food, all this stuff. But I got to see Lyle Lovett perform with a full symphony just in this, I mean, just beauty of nature, you know. And it's one of those things where I walked away from it, and it was just kind of like, you don't really think about it at the time, and it's just like the older I get, I'm like, I wish I was old enough to appreciate that. I'm glad I was there, but it's just, man, I wish I was a little bit older to take that one in.
Well, he is so self-effacing, and but I mean, just funny as can be, mm-hmm. too. Just a great character too. So yeah, that's cool. Hey, this is a sports show. If you like, I mean, we'll talk whatever. Look, it's July.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we're coming up on SEC Media Days. There's not a ton of breaking news. Argentina advances in the World Cup today, eliminating England 2-1. They were down 1-0. Well into the 85th or 86th minute before mm-hmm. they scored, and then they scored again within a few minutes there, and they win 2-1 to advance to the championship against Spain on Sunday. So that has happened today. Let's see, the we were talking a little basket, a little Auburn mm-hmm. basketball. I wanted to you got a chance to talk to Thomas Dowd, mm-hmm. and you were giving us some of your first impressions of the young man, the transfer from Troy, who was mm-hmm. just a double-double machine there. But as you said, a lot of talk today about the other things that he does just besides, you know, scoring.
Yeah, and I think I know I've got it somewhere because we talked to Kevin Overton today too, and I thought KO summed it up, even though he was referencing something I was not there to watch, but he basically got asked about Dowd, and he goes, he'll be why we win a lot of games. That was like the first thing he said.
That's good.
But basically his bottom line, what did he say? He said, yeah, the winning plays, the dirty stuff, that's why we'll win games, and that'll be him. He's been exactly what he said he was, exactly what we recruited him for, and the scrimmage we won today, that was because of him. You know,
well, you know, a guy that'll get in there and battle on the boards and give you another rebounder, where you've got mm-hmm. the 7-footers, but you've got somebody else who knows how to get in there and battle for the rebounds to keep things alive on offense, or to, you know, get you going from defense.
Yeah, and it was interesting too, because he talked about how he kind of got a knack, I guess, for rebounding, and really like offensive rebounding. He just basically mentioned when he was a lot younger, was playing AAU ball, was playing AAU ball, technically was on a team, but was really just playing on the bench, you know, mm-hmm. for 40 minutes. And his dad at one point was like, we got to figure out. He's like, you got to get good at something
right.
other than scoring to get on the floor here. And that was, I guess, what kind of opened things up for him. And, you know, I just think that's one of those things that is such a valuable piece to have. And then you add it into everything else. You know, we were talking about the 7-footers earlier. The other element that got brought up today was, you know, you've got Adam Olson, obviously Kevin Overton and Tahad Pettiford. You've got Mantis was mentioned. You know, Kevin Overton kind of, what did he say? He was talking about just the three-point shooters and mentioned Mantis, and he kind of took a beat, and he just goes, he's like, that's twin. He was like, he seems to have a lot of affection for him, is what I would say, and I think
cool.
he's quite the shooter. But
yeah, I saw the little video the other mm-hmm. day.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That did how many? That was just he was just ripping off shots left and right.
It was in the teens.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, but he's one where I wish I would have woken up and gotten there at 7 a.m. to watch him play a little bit. But yeah, you just the vibes are, you know, it's another case of the off season. It is the sunshine hour in a lot of ways. But I really do think you've got a lot to be excited about with that basketball team.
I think that so many interesting pieces. You didn't even mention Owen Freeman's another
yep.
guy. I mean, it's like mm-hmm. You know, they've got so many really interesting stories that are coming in, and quite a few of them have, as has been the case with Auburn transfers, they've got something to prove.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like either coming back from health or making that step up to the SEC to this level.
And I will tell you, like, this basketball program does a really good job with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They do a phenomenal job with them, because it's just, you know, we were talking about baseball a little earlier.
Right.
Obviously, whole different sport, but you just sometimes it's you don't know till you get there. And these guys, like, I will say, I remember sitting down with Stephen Pearl before the Final Four 2 years ago. And it's funny because it's, you know, it's an archetype of story that I had done before in different ways that we've done before, but it was just basically like, this ship is built out of transfers. Talk to me about how you recruited each one of them, why you went after them. And it was just really impressive to like basically look at and hear about how they go through the portal and really like, you know, Miles Kelly was always the example that stuck out to me. He was the star at Georgia Tech.
Right.
He did everything. But, you know, Auburn needed a guy who could be a volume, you know, shooter from distance. And it's like the pitch was kind of, we want you to come in and play to your strength in this way. But we think that in giving you more of a focus, you know, you're not, you're going to be able to do other stuff that much better, you know? So I just thought that was such a fascinating thing to kind of talk through and get a better understanding of. And then you look at these guys and kind of see how they all fit. And it's, you see that mold there, you know? But I just, all's to say, I think this program does a really good job of finding those guys and, you know, getting it out of them.
And this year, I mean, they had, you know, Brian Clomen comes in and you've got to be ready and they obviously had their ducks in a row, and they knew who they wanted to go after, and they went out and they got them and assembled this roster pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. No, so it's I think it's a pretty impressive job of roster building. And I will tell you, like, another thing, you know, that could be taken away from today, it was both Kevin Overton and Thomas Dowd talked about this, but, like, they were just kind of talking about the cohesion, like, already.
That's what you want to hear. I mean, right. Obviously, when you've got as many new players.
Right. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, unless I'm at the team meetings and the team lunches, you know, maybe I don't see it. But, like, just the spirit is, to me, it's there as far as, like, everybody's kind of coming together. And it seems like you're getting what you need. And, you know, I forget exactly when it'll be, but within the next month, you know, you're going to Greece
right.
for a couple weeks.
As a matter of fact, yeah, the Sandersons asked me that today. I don't know exactly when it is. I know mm-hmm. it's in August.
Yes.
And I would assume it's pretty early August because classes get started, mm-hmm. You know, before too late. When do the fall classes start, Drew? It's usually around the 15th.
I think it's like the 17th.
Yeah, okay. I knew it's usually around the middle of the month. So I would assume they're heading in fairly early August. So
yeah.
I'd say, you know, just
here in the next
less than 2 or 3 weeks.
I believe that's right. But that's one of those things where, you know, I mean, what, the Final Four team, they went to Israel, right? Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, it just, I think that's one of those things where there's always something to be taken from that.
I mean, it is such an opportunity to really bond, to build that chemistry, as well as, you know, get more acclimated with each other and playing with each other mm-hmm. and build the on the court. But, I mean, it's really great when you can have that off court mm-hmm. Chemistry as well. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. And, I didn't realize they were going to be scrimmaging today either. And, of course, I couldn't have made it. I was doing a show at 8 o'clock. 7 o'clock's a little tough for an old guy that's retired.
Yeah.
That's an early practice, man. That's tough for Steven and them to do that.
I feel like I'm talking to my mom and dad.
Yeah, really. Well, all right. It's still early in hour number two. Plenty of time. Love for you to join in. I know that that we've got some folks that can add to what we've been talking about, or if you've got you know, some questions or thoughts in another direction, I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader and home of Auburn women's basketball.
90, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. Drew is at the controls. Don't forget, next week, SEC Media Days down in Tampa. And ESPN 106.7 is going to be there. As Christian and Tripp going to be down there. I'm going to be hanging back here, though, checking in with everybody. If you get a chance, Adam, on Wednesday, definitely want to talk to you, get your thoughts from you know, how everything went with Auburn on Tuesday, but we'll be checking in with the folks that are usually on with us and seeing if we can grab some of the other folks that are down there. As you, once again, there'll be 7 hours of coverage of SEC Media Days primarily. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about other things that are going on in the world of sports as well. But Doug and the Roundtable going to be down there from 11 to 2. Christian and Tripp down there from 2 to 4 with On the Line. And then we'll sort of recap and let you know. I mean, as every day, you've got four coaches, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. Auburn going on Tuesday morning along with Kirby Smart in Georgia on Tuesday, and it's all made possible by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic. Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and the Depot in downtown Auburn. So check us out next week for coverage of SEC Media Days. 334-321-1390 is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and JR is up first. Hey, JR.
Hey, I was just going to comment on what Adam was talking about out in eastern Kansas. My son's stationed at Fort Riley, and right there around Junction City, and you know, just being around the South my whole life, when I went up there, I absolutely fell in love with it. But that is an awesome place up there.
I love to hear that. I think, yeah, the first girl I ever dated was from Riley County. So it was like it's just like a hop, skip, and a jump from over there. But no, that's cool to hear, and I'm glad to hear you fell in love with it, because that's the part of the country that raised me. That is always going to be home.
Yeah, I
guess, love that place.
Yeah, I guess you're right though, Adam. I mean, you know, you just think of just flat fields is what you think of. You know, when you think of the Midwest mostly.
Yeah, no, and it's, I mean, I've only done the drive east to west of Kansas once. It's brutal. I hope nobody has to do that if they don't want to. But no, there is a lot of beauty, at least in a little section or sliver of my home state, to me. So no, I'm very happy to hear that, JR.
Are you familiar with Junction City?
A little bit, yeah. I grew up in.
Have you been like where the big hill is? It's got the big gun on top of it.
Mm.
I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah, that vaguely is that like in Junction City, or is that by Fort Riley?
Yes, it's basically right. It's on by the interstate, but right out of Junction City there.
Okay, that rings a bell, because yeah, I remember like driving to Junction City. My grandpa farmed sheep growing up. I worked as a farmhand for about 6 summers,
right.
And we'd drive west all the way out to Clay Center, and I remember you'd drive by Fort Riley, and I remember, like, whether it was cannons or there was just always – you knew you were driving by Fort Riley.
That's
so
right.
I don't know if that's it, but that it rings a bell.
That's right. Well, thank y'all, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, JR, good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. You never know when you're going to touch something and people are going to go, oh, yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, no, that's – I don't know. I love hearing that. Like, that's awesome. I always ride for my home state, you know? So, yeah, that's cool to hear.
334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about here on the Wednesday drive? All right, so we really haven't talked much football. I mean, we'll get much more into it next week with Media Days, but I guess one thing we haven't mentioned today is the news of a flip from Auburn to Alabama. Cedric Simmons, who I think most people expected to head to Alabama, committed to Auburn just a few weeks ago, the receiver from Selma. And today, flipping to Alabama, but I mean to the school where I think he'd grown up, you know, and is an Alabama fan, and it was a little bit of a surprise when he committed to Auburn in the first place.
Yeah, and I mean, like, kind of like to the point of that, you know, I mean, I know it was a slip, so to speak, but flipping back, you know, like he's not technically flipping back,
right.
But I remember that, you know, I'm sitting in Prattville right after Deshaun Hall's commitment, and it was just
That was same day, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was about 20 minutes later, you know, but you'd kind of seen maybe the night before, it's like, oh, okay, you know, Auburn might have a shot here, and you know, he's an interesting prospect.
Oh,
I know
is.
We talked about him a little bit, a little undersized. I think
slot. I mean, he is definitely a slot guy, a slasher. I mean, a guy that obviously really good hand. He had over 100 receptions, I believe, this past year.
Yeah, and played two ways. I think listed as an athlete by a lot of recruiting sites. So widely viewed as a guy who's going to play receiver at the next level. But no, that'll be an interesting one. And just, you know, I will admit to you, my first thought when I saw that flip today, you remember Antonio Coleman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't know that that's what we're in for, but I just, every time I see somebody flipping in that way, all I can think is, okay, can we get one more? Can we get a little closer to the Antonio Coleman graphic? I want to see somebody break that record someday, you know?
Golly, I don't know that I do.
you know.
Back and forth and back and, yeah.
For the sake and the sanctity of sports, less than ideal, but man, that was just, that was a saga. He flipped, what, 4 times in total?
Yeah, I think so.
Didn't think you could do that. Didn't think you could manage
Sure you can. I mean, as long as there's time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's – it's tough. I mean, the thing is, and look, and sometimes, you know, people really rag on the kids, but it's tough for them, too. I mean, they can genuinely like something very strongly about two different places.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're back and forth. And man, as wishy-washy as I was when I was 17, 18.
Right.
Oh, I can understand.
Yeah.
I mean, you think, all right, I've made up my mind, I'm going to do this. And then you may wake up the next morning and go, was that the right thing to do? And you hear from the other side and they're going, man, we really want you. And this is where you've always wanted to go. And mm-hmm. you go, yeah, you know, you're right. Okay, all right, I'm coming there.
Right, right. It's like I say all of that lighthearted and with brevity because, yeah, it's just like there's that element of it. I think obviously you've got this financial at least.
Yeah, that didn't used to be at least
above board. Right. And so now you have that element. And then, you know, like the other stuff that maybe doesn't always come to mind, but, you know, it's like not everybody has the perfect set of parents, if that makes sense. That
oh, yeah.
can be an influence.
Oh,
I
you're right. You're
I'm
right.
trying to remember, was it, I cannot remember the prospect, but somebody committed to either Florida or LSU, and his mom wanted him to commit to the other, and they were on national TV, and he commits to the other one, and she gets up and walks off. You know, and so, like, I say that very generally, but that's, you know, that's another element you may not always think about. You've got the whole, I say in air quotes, agent thing now. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
You know, I'm not shocked to see a kid.
And look, don't mm-hmm. think that most of them are done once a player yeah. commits either.
Yeah.
They're still looking for the best deal for their, you know, mm-hmm. their client and themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's, quite frankly, I think kind of even more fair to say of the college agent market now, because that to me is like, not to zoom out and get meta here, that to me is one of the biggest problems that nobody talks about with college sports
recruiting
right now.
You're 100% right, because you don't have to, you know, you don't have to necessarily be, you don't have to be licensed. You don't have mm-hmm. to be, mm-hmm. you know, there are no standards that you that you have to live up to
right.
to be a rep, an agent.
Right. You know, and it's, I forget if I've told you this story, but there was a gentleman in my hometown who was an agent for NFL players mm-hmm. who his kids went to my K-8, got to know him at one point when I was there. He is from Alabama. He played, I believe, alongside Derek Thomas at Alabama.
Oh, okay.
And got a finance degree when he was in Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to, I think he's from Gadsden area, worked at the Goodyear plant, got transferred out to Topeka where there's another Goodyear plant. And considering he had a finance degree, his story was he had friends growing up who had kids eventually reach this point where, you know, they've got pro opportunities, things like that. And so he went back to school and got a law degree, because in order to be an approved agent by the NFLPA, you need to either have a, you know, a finance or a law degree. And he got both,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he at the time, I remember, I think he was repping Marcel Darius, you know, I remember that name. I believe Dre Kirkpatrick too, not junior, like
right.
the OG.
Oh, yeah.
And his, the funniest one to talk to him about was his most notable client, who also gave him, as he told us, some of the least legal trouble, which a lot of people, you just wouldn't put the two together.
Oh, yeah.
Chad Johnson.
Huh.
He repped Chad Johnson, and he was like, there's only ever been one incident, and it was, I forget what it was, but it was like, yeah, he was like, he's you know, he's out there, but he's not a problem like that. But yeah, I always have never been able for the life of me. I've gone and tried to scour and look up his name, but I always think about him when I hear about these agents or I see these agents, because it's like, they're not, you know, they're agents in air quotes for these
right.
college kids, but they're not agents, and you... That to me is...
You don't feel like they're legit.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure that some, maybe most
yeah.
Are trying to be.
Right. And I think there's, you know, the world is not a black and white place. There are a lot of gray areas, and I imagine there are a lot of people of that mold doing this. But even still, it's one of those things where I wish somebody with, like, the national writer bandwidth would take, you know, 6 to 12 months to, mm-hmm. you know, call around and like do a story that highlights this stuff. Because I just think it's one of those things where we talk about all the problems that everybody sees, but I just don't feel like people bring that up, quite frankly, enough.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we get questions at times from folks wondering what are the universities doing for the kids? What
mm-hmm.
are, you know, because everything is, it's about them and mm-hmm. it should be
mm-hmm.
about them. But you want things to be for their benefit, for them to understand and be able to, you know, really get rewarded in the right way for what they're doing. And that's where, you know, people wonder, well, are the schools trying to teach them what to do with their money? But the other side of it is, yes, do they have the right people that are representing them, that are really, that understand what to do, which is the best for them, not just, you know, what's the most I can get, and then what's my cut going to be?
Right, exactly. And that, it's just, that needs, to me, to have some real uniformity and regulation. I think that was one of the few things in the Protect College Sports Act that I was like, okay, I forget exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there are some there are some things in there that need to, you know, to be addressed and hopefully can be at some point. But there were so many things in there that just weren't going to be able to be okayed by the folks that really mattered.
Yeah, no. But it's just, that is one of those things where I got on my soapbox there for a little bit. But that is
one of my few
soapboxes of just like, there's got to be something there at some point.
Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser alongside. We've got about another 20 minutes when we come back from our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive, Bill and Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. And let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre, how you been?
I've been pretty good, Bill. Haven't really been in touch with the radio, but I want to talk a little bit about baseball.
Sure.
I heard Gabe got released. I don't know if he got released or he quit, or how did that work out?
No, he's actually moving off the field and going to be involved, still going to be part of the athletic department. I believe his is like a special assistant I'm not sure exactly what, special assistant to the AD or whatever, but he's going to be involved with fan engagement, still going to be involved with baseball, but he's not going to have to be involved in the day-to-day. We were talking about it a little bit yesterday with Jason, Adam. The role of an assistant coach now that used to be, once the season ended, you'd sort of be able to have a break and have a little time there in the summer. That's not the case anymore with the transfer portal, with trying to get your roster back after the major league draft. It is, you're still on the go, and it is really, really busy. Gabe's got a couple of teenagers, son and daughter, and he's going to be able to, have more time to be able to spend with them, but not going to be leaving Auburn, not going to be leaving the athletic department. So that's good for Gabe. I think it's and then Auburn was ready and went out and hired a guy who has been fabulous at Georgia and then Kentucky before that the last few years. Georgia setting all kinds of offensive records. Kentucky, as Adam mentioned a while ago, his last 3 years, he's been part of 3 SEC championships and 2 College World Series teams. And he's a guy that played for John Cohen and Butch Thompson when he was at Mississippi State as a catcher. So I think it's good all around.
Well, I guess what I'm asking, and you may not know, but is this like something that was in the works? They were waiting to see if they could get this guy from Georgia, and then they was going to move Gabe up to a desk job, or was this something that that caught Gabe off guard?
I don't think it's something that that caught Gabe off guard.
Yeah, I think it was more of the former, as I understand it, and I don't know like how specific to that example it was, but I think it was very much of the nature of like, I don't think Auburn and Gabe were planning to part ways at the end of the year just to part ways. I think it was very much like, I think Butch and the program wanted to make sure they had somebody in place if they were going to do that, and I think it just, it worked out.
Let me expound on that. The last couple of years, it feels like to me we had something missing, especially when we had men on base and couldn't score any runs. In the last couple of years, it seemed like it was snowballing, and I was wondering if that had any effect to him leaving
Well, I'm sure there was frustration on Gabe's part as well. You know, not just with the fans or anybody else. And things change. Analytics have changed baseball over the years, and Auburn's really gotten into that heavily in pitching, and now we're gonna see, you know, if Auburn can make that next step in hitting. I mean, they've got, as Adam mentioned it in the first hour, Specter, Auburn's got, I think, some real power potential. Look, they hit a few homers. They really picked it up down the stretch this year, but I think they have the potential to hit quite a few more with the players they have coming back.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Has Mr. Baseball called in about this hire? Mr. Baseball, I'm talking about Tex.
I don't think we've talked to Tex since Monday. I don't imagine Tex is going to be broken up about the addition of Nick Amorati.
I was want to see what he thought about it. If he's listening, if you're listening, Tex, call in and let me hear what you're saying.
I'm sure he will, Specter, if he's listening.
All right. See you guys.
Good hearing from you, Specter. Appreciate it. 334-321-1390. Anthony is up next. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
I'm calling about the player. I'm not. Let's see. I think is it Middle Tennessee or Western Kentucky? The lineman there that took some time off. His mother died or whatnot, and there was some kind of miscommunication between coaches, and he was gone 2 months. And now he no longer has a scholarship. I mean, you know, you hate to see something like that when things like that happen. I mean, when I was playing ball and things like that happen, and if I'm not mistaken, Coach Burgess got special permission to get the team bus, and we went to a funeral. One of the players, our father, got killed or whatnot, and they had to, at that time, get permission to transport everybody and pay for meals and that sort of thing. But for something like that to happen, and the head coach or whoever's in charge or whatever going on, ain't got sense enough to reach out to the guy and find out exactly what timetable he'll be back, how much time he needed. To my understanding, he took care of business in the classroom, is close to graduating or whatnot. It looked like something could have been worked out instead of that kind of chaos like that.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot more details on it than that. You know, there was a mandatory date to report by, which they hadn't had, and so they, you know, basically dropped him, and he's not going to be able to finish. But I want to know the rest of the story.
Yeah, that's, and I admit, admittedly, I saw the headlines, I think, yesterday when a lot of this mm-hmm. stuff came out. But it's one of those things I have needed to go back and read up on, because, yeah, I think, Bill, I think I'm kind of in your boat. I want to know more. I probably need to know more. But it was definitely, I mean, headline alone, like, that's just terrible thing to see.
Yeah, because, I mean, the story, and again, I pulled it up. I mean, the only thing that I've seen, and I'm looking for more details, was that he went back home to be with his family after his mother unexpectedly passed. And the NCAA is saying, sorry, you can't continue your career. So I want to know more about that story. You're right. It's terrible sounding story, Anthony.
But the school is really pushing that, right? Because they didn't want to file the paperwork saying he can return, right?
I think that was – I did –
Yeah, they dropped it. They dropped him from scholarship, yes.
And if I'm right, I saw yesterday somebody had mentioned it, but the way that they – I don't know if it was the way that they had put him maybe in the portal as a transfer or something like that. Something that they did was basically to where he was not eligible this year. And I would assume off of that maybe probably they could have done it differently. But that's, again, like, that's one of those details I need to read up myself and get better caught up on it. But that's a good point, because I had seen that yesterday and hadn't kind of forgotten about it.
But as far as we know it now, if he's academically eligible and took care of that part, and then that happened and got all the press and got in a place, mine went right, and he was out 2 months or whatnot, I mean, come on, why do somebody like that?
Oh, no, you're right. You know, I mean, it sure sounds like, if he were academically eligible, I can't imagine why you would do that. I mean, you know, it sounds like was his sounds like Western Kentucky treated him as though his eligibility were done, and the NCAA's now got a new 5-for-5 deal. That could be why the NCAA is saying no. This looks like a case where you would think, if you know, if everything is as we've heard it, they'd have a very good appeal to be able to go back and say, look, he should be able to get another year somewhere.
you know, I'll say this. This is why I agree with players getting every dime they could possibly get in the NIL money or any kind of money that is perfectly legal for them to have. Now, see, this is a nasty side of football. This kind of stuff you usually see at a Division II school that are very limited on resources and people sharing scholarships or whatnot. That's the kind of cutthroat stuff you see on that level that people will never hear about because most people ain't talking about Division II football. I mean, that kind of thing. You know, where you got so many players on one scholarship. Got four or five players sharing one scholarship. I mean, you know. But this here, it just makes football, it's a black eye for the whole thing, college, all football. For whole college football, NCAA, everything. It's just a black eye and it looks bad in this kind of situation. There's no humanity or nothing. And all we care about is winning. He probably ain't in shape, so we better drop him and grab somebody else or this kind of nonsense. To my understanding, it stated that he was one semester away from graduating. So
right.
That tell you that he was on the business, taking care of business in the classroom. I just say, you know, this right here, I won't be watching a Western Kentucky game. I don't care who to play. I've seen him in the past play Alabama and different teams in the Southern Conference and whatnot, but I won't be tuning them in on my TV set. I just tell you that.
No, that's a great point, Anthony. And here's what the deal was, Cole. Adam. It's the Western Kentucky processed him as a quote failure to report, and that does not allow him. That prohibits him from entering the transfer portal. And then the NCAA says, well, if he didn't report and he can't enter the transfer portal, then he's done.
Man,
that's the situation right now.
Well, maybe he can get in the courtroom and get this thing.
I would think that's very likely.
Maybe get some money behind this. But the NCAA need to clean themselves up, and Western Kentucky definitely need to clean themselves up, too. Guys, I appreciate it.
Yep, appreciate the call. By the way, the Western Kentucky coach is Tyson Helton, Kim Helton's son.
Okay, I'm gonna admit on air here.
His dad was an assistant here, and I believe he started his career here. Then he transferred, and then Kim's been in coaching for a long time. But Tyson Helton is the coach there at Western Kentucky. The player Victory Vaca said that the head coach, that Tyson Helton didn't provide a specific return deadline. Western Kentucky said he was supposed to have reported by May 26th.
Yeah, I think I saw.
And then on June 2nd is when they processed that failure to report.
Yeah, I think I saw, because I was just scrolling through. I think it was CBS. We might be scrolling through the same one, but he, I think, had gotten a call from a strength coach before his mom's funeral that was basically like laying out, you know, his plan for the offseason,
right,
as well as we expect you back in June. And then I guess, yeah, I got a call May 26th and ask him where he was, and now we're here.
Yeah, that's a sad story.
That is, take it to the courtroom, like genuinely.
Yeah. This one, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times I go, oh, come on now.
Yeah.
This case, I can see where, yes, there should be grounds for him to be able to win this appeal. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to wrap things up here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience enough. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Wednesday. All right, I was trying to get my Heltons straight here. All right, Kim Helton is the father. He was the head coach at Houston. He was a longtime offensive line coach. He played at Florida. His son, Tyson, is his son. His other son is Clay, who signed with Auburn and was a backup quarterback at Auburn before he transferred to Houston. All right, so there is. I knew there was some sort of type of connection through some kind of relation to Auburn.
We got there, and not to mention, like, learned something new today. Like, I did not know Clay Helton had played for a time at Auburn.
He signed with Coach Dye.
Okay.
And there was talk that Kim Helton might come, but I believe he got offered a job. Maybe that was when he went to the Raiders before he was the Houston head coach.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, assistant coaches. I'll get Don in here Friday. We'll talk about. I mean, some of the crazy, you know, connections and relationships and things that pop up.
So what is it?
The
Kevin Bacon game.
Yeah,
that's all. That's all what I always refer to it as. But yeah, that one happens a lot in the coaching world. It's so
no
small.
Kidding.
No, but it's today I learned.
Yeah,
I learned.
Well, hey, it's always fun. I mean, yeah, we went in a bunch of different directions today, so it was a lot of fun. Before we're out of time, yeah, let folks know, you know, how they can keep up with everything that you're doing there with the advertiser, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're looking to just go straight to the source, head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click sports at the top, and whether it's a little drop down or a banner, you should see the word Auburn there, and if you see that, just click on it, and you're going to have everything you need. And if you're looking for me, whether that's on Twitter or TikTok, I would especially note the latter, heading back to media days. We'll be, you know, kind of whipping up more video stuff here in the next couple weeks. But yeah, Twitter, TikTok, wherever on social media, if you just search at Cole Reporter, that's my last name, spelled C-O-L-E and the word reporter. You're going to be able to find me wherever you are looking for me.
Sounds good, Adam. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good time down in Tampa.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm excited. I'm excited. Should be a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to that. And again, we'll have coverage starting Monday right here on ESPN 106.7 as well. That's going to wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Justin Ferguson in tomorrow. We'll get so he probably was there at the crack of dawn this morning.
He was. He will be.
I mean,
able
there's
to
nobody.
That
there's
scrimmage.
Nobody that's gonna get more into basketball than Ferg. So we'll have him tomorrow. So looking forward to that. But we're out of time here. Again, our thanks to Adam for being here on the Wednesday edition, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.